Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Every Sunday night, Open House comes to you broadcast from a studio named after my next guest. He's been a doyen of television broadcasters in Australia, radio broadcasters, for decades, literally a household name. His career stretched from some of the glory days of radios in the 50s, pre-television. And he then went on to carve out a very significant career in television news, as well as hosting This Is Your Life for many years, and later Australia's Most Wanted, The Clues Are Building. He also made a highly significant contribution to Christian radio over a couple of decades, and I've had the great privilege to have worked with him in a number of capacities over these past 25 years or so. The gold plaque outside our studio carries the name Roger Climson. Roger, welcome to Open House.
Lee, thank you for that absolutely magnificent introduction.
It's wonderful to have you. It's magnificent to have you in the studio.
Well, it's like old times in yours, actually.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
How nice. You're a long-time chairman of what is now Hope Media, so I should say welcome back.
Well, thank you very much. It feels like coming back because it's so many faces I still recognise, and they still recognise me with the white hair.
You haven't changed much, mate. Roger is a great storyteller with many great stories to tell. So I want to start at the beginning. How was it that you got into the industry in the first place from a family where your dad was a butcher?
Yes, my father was a butcher in England, a very successful one. Mm. And the thought of a son of his becoming an actor was the last thing in the world he could possibly stomach. But I said to him, if I could possibly win a scholarship to the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art in London, by which stage he was laughing already.
You aimed low.
Yes. I said, if I could win a scholarship, would you let me be an actor then? He said, of course I would. Well, strange as it may seem, I had a couple of contacts at the Academy who gave me a pretty clear indication of what would be expected of me and the sort of questions. And would you believe it, miracle of miracles, I got a scholarship to the Royal Academy to study Shakespeare in particular. Wow. Then when I finished, I had a couple of small parts in the West End, and I had a chance to go to Stratford for about a year to carry a spear for £5 a week. But I decided that that wasn't particularly good. I thought there must be something better to do than carrying a spear for £5 a week. And I had a couple of friends in Australia who were radio actors who said, on the letters they sent me, for goodness sake, come back here. They desperately need young radio actors. Mm. So I thought, well, I'll give it a go. That's surely better than living in a garret studying Shakespeare with the rain coming through the roof.
Yes.
So I took the offer, I came out here, and within 3 days of stepping off the ship, I started working in radio drama.
What did your dad say?
My father didn't say very much. He was dumbstruck, I think. But about a year or so later, would you believe, he sold his shops in England and came to Australia. Oh, yeah. So in a funny way, William Shakespeare was responsible for the whole family of butchers coming to Australia.
Tell me about those glory days in radio, very different from the radio we know now.
Oh, they were fantastic.
Great times.
You see, we used to actually earn our living in those days by doing episodes, 12 and a half minutes in length, and all the major commercial stations had these on. They were virtually the same, I suppose, as the episodes we have today in television, but this was just radio. Things like When a Girl Marries, Hop Harrigan, Tarzan, King of the Apes. As a matter of fact, I did about 1,500 episodes of Tarzan as the narrator. But it was a fantastic experience, and the characters in those days were absolutely outstanding. They were just the most amazing people. And I think I learned more in that year of experience of working with them than all the years one could spend at the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art.
Yeah.
You literally would run from one studio to the next to do possibly one or two episodes or whatever it may be at 12 shillings and sixpence an episode.
Wow.
And I tell you what, in
that's
those days,
that's pretty good money.
Well, it was in those days, yes. In the 1950s, 51, 52, because, I mean, in those days, the average wage was about £6 a week. And it's amazing, if you on the condition that you didn't make mistakes, if you didn't make what they called fluffs, if you fluffed, you were in big, big trouble, because it meant in those days they were recorded straight to disc, and if somebody made a mistake, you had to go right back to the beginning of the episode.
Yeah.
And that's how it used to be. And may I tell you a story?
Yes, yes. Because lots of funny moments and fun moments. No
there were very funny moments. In Tarzan, King of the Apes, one day, we had a new character in there who'd never been in before as an actor. And he was playing the part of Kavanda Vanda, who was also the leader of the natives. And he had a running part for 5 or 6 episodes, but this was the last episode to be recorded that day, which was his first episode. So we didn't rehearse, no rehearsal, but nobody told him this. Nobody even spoke to him. You just mark up your script and record it. And the actual first time that you're saying it at the microphone, it is being recorded onto a disc.
Yes.
So anyway, he only had one line in this. He had to say one thing, which was, "I am Kavanda Vanda, lead on." That's all he had to say. Up would come the drums, the closing music. I would do the narration, and we could all go home. Right. We come all the way through a very difficult episode, lions fighting tigers and Tarzan fighting snakes and whatever you have. Wonderful job done by the sound effects guy. And we get right through to the last page. Oh. And the drums are going and he said, "I am the leader, lead on, Kavanda, Kavonga."
Oh, no.
Bother it, I can't say that. And there was this dreadful pause. And then he said, "But we were just rehearsing, weren't we?"
That's mortifying.
Well, it was on tape, wasn't it? No.
You goose.
So right back to the beginning. Oh, no. But unfortunately for him, the man that produced the programme, Brian White, was also the writer. And he, in the very next episode, the first one of the following week, got killed by a spear. I wonder why.
How convenient. And we never saw him again.
I don't think we did in Tarzan.
What great days. And then you moved into television. And the very early days of television. The earliest days of television.
It was the earliest days of television because as soon as radio drama was confronted by television, all the commercial stations melted in their boots and took all the drama off because they said, come on, I mean, radio can't compete with images. So therefore, what's the point of us? We'll just take all the sound programmes off, the dramas, and replace it with music, which of course they did.
Yes.
So most of us in the space of literally a month, I would say, we were out of a job. And I was very lucky. I happened to be doing some radio commercials, which were the one thing that was left at that time. They were still going, of course, commercials. People started to advertise.
Yes.
Anyway, so I was there, and who should be in there this particular day at the studio but Brian Henderson, who of course, had started off the first day of television.
Wow.
This is about 3 weeks after television had started. I met him in there. And I said, boy, Brian, you knew what you were doing, didn't you, when you decided that you were going to give the radio side of this away and start on television on Channel 9. Well done. Must be wonderful. He said, wonderful. It's terrible. He said, we're desperately, desperately understaffed. I'm doing the job of 3 people, but we can't seem to find anybody that could do the job to be a general announcer. Don't suppose you'd be interested.
Hello, yes.
Hello, indeed. Yeah. I said, I'd give my right arm. I've got a wife and 2 children. Of course I'd. He said, oh, well, I'll talk to Ken Hall, who was the general manager, and maybe he'll give you a ring. I thought, that'll never happen. Next day, phone call from Ken Hall, did an audition, and would you believe, less than a week later, I was working at Channel 9.
Wow. And also in those days for television too, pioneering days, hairy days, making it up.
Oh, yes.
As you went along almost.
Well, almost. I think the first thing that was pretty horrendous was the makeup. Because the lights were so incredibly strong in those days, which they had to be, because obviously the cameras weren't nearly as effective as they are today, pardon me, because of that, the makeup was much darker. It was a dark brown makeup, and you wore a mauve-coloured lipstick, and they made up your eyebrows.
How fetching.
And you went on looking like a man from Mars or something. Quite incredible. And then, of course, everything again was live. The Bobby Lim Late Show, they discovered I was an actor, of course, so immediately I got hauled into that. And we used to do that live on a Friday night between 9 and 10:30, I think it was. All the sketches, the whole lot, were all live. Mm. And some of the most incredible things happened. I mean, for example, at one occasion, Bobby Lim was playing the good cowboy standing at the top of the stairs dressed in white. And I'm at the bottom as the bad cowboy, dressed in black. We'd pull our revolvers and fire at each other, and I dropped down dead, and the whole side of the set fell out. I mean, Bob just stood there and said, well, I guess that never happened before. I could go on for hours.
I bet you could. And then you went from being an announcer more to the news area.
That's right.
Again, pioneering days, you know, you'd hardly recognise those days compared to what news is now, often flying by the seat of your pants.
Yes, often flying by the seat of your pants, because as you will appreciate in those days, Lee, we didn't have a tape. We literally had a 16mm film, which had to be literally edited by breaking and sticking together, you see, so that it was the right length. And the trouble is the actual things they stuck it together with were put in so fast because they obviously wouldn't often get some of the stories until about 10 minutes before the news was due, especially the lead story, and they wouldn't stick it together properly. And you'd be halfway through the story, and all of a sudden, one of the sprockets would catch it in the wrong place, and the actual film would snap.
Thank you.
And there you are confronted with, what do you do? Because you have to wait until such time as they take the film and the reel off the machine, take it outside, refix it, put it back, roll it back to the same position. What are you supposed to talk about in the meantime?
What did you do?
Well, for the first, we used to try and ad-lib of the previous stories we'd gone through and say, I'll just repeat that main story again. And then we apologise for the fact that it hasn't returned. And now I think perhaps we should go for a commercial break, hoping they had the commercial, a reel up and all set to go. In other words, you were flying by the seat of your pants. But gradually, surprising how long it took, they began to realise that you could have a pile of standby copy. Read.
Yes.
So when
yes.
it went wrong, you'll just keep on reading. But sometimes you read it very slowly because you were convinced you didn't have enough items to read before they could be back with the actual film script.
Sometimes I think what we do today is pretty hairy, but it doesn't get more hairy than that.
I don't think it does than that, no. And of course, in those days, we didn't have auto cue.
No.
And auto cue was an amazing thing. I think I was virtually, I think I'm correct in this, certainly in Sydney, the very first person to use auto cue on the news.
Which is a little box of kind of funny mirrors in front of a camera where you can look at the camera and read the words.
That's right.
The camera shoots through.
As you say, the words literally roll up on this screen, which is reflected directly over where the lens of the camera is. And anyway, I walked down there one night to read the news, and Mike Ramsden, the news director at Channel 9, said, Rog, listen, don't read it off his script, just read it off the camera there, will you? Can you see it? There are these words. Stand by, cue. And there am I reading the 6:30 news, as it was in those days, looking at these words rolling up. And I kept going and going, and the further I went, the bigger my eyes got, and the more amazed I became, and I read the entire news off the auto cue. When I'd finished, some fellow rang up and said, what on earth did you do to your newsman tonight? He learnt the news by heart. He said, I was so busy watching him, I haven't got a clue what he said.
Say? That's often the case. Tell me about the Pope and the Bull.
Ah, well, now, the Pope. In the mid-70s, I'm afraid, I can't remember what year it was, the Pope came to Australia, to Sydney, and I remember the first day, the Monday, was a crazy day with so many things that he was doing. And, of course, that night on the news, the very first item was about His Holiness the Pope. And I came on and said, ladies and gentlemen, as you are well aware, His Holiness the Pope is with us at the moment. And the first thing that he undertook this morning, his first duty, was to go across Sydney Harbour on a ferry to open a new building at Manly. Up comes the footage of the Pope going across Sydney Harbour on a ferry, waving happily. There was just one slight problem. For some inexplicable reason, the Pope was going across Sydney Harbour upside down and backwards. Some idiot had put the film in back to front.
No.
So the director had a fit, panicked,
really?
Went to black, came back to me. And what am I supposed to say?
I know.
And I said literally the first thing that came into my head, which was, I bet he never did that before. Well, the switchboard lit up like a sort of a Christmas tree with people saying they'd never watch the news again and other people saying, thank you, it was the funniest thing they'd ever seen. So there you go.
We're with Roger Clemson on Open House tonight, remembering back over a very significant life in broadcasting, especially in Christian broadcasting, and we'll get to that in just a moment. Across Australia, this is Open House. You're with Open House tonight, and our very special guest tonight is broadcasting doyen, Roger Clemson. Roger, as I said before in the intro, you're a household name, very high recognition factor, certainly with people on the street.
Yes, that would be true. It is amazing, though, may I say, that after sort of the best part of 16 years of being away from the screen, it's surprising still how many people still recognise me. Mm. Surprises me.
Even when it comes to recognition in the midst of a car crash.
Ah. Well, yes, this occurred many years ago now when I was reading news for Channel 7. And this was a particular Saturday morning, and I was driving in Sydney, in Crow's Nest, on the Pacific Highway. It was raining quite heavily, a very slick road, and very heavy traffic, 11 o'clock on a Saturday morning. And the car in front of me stopped very suddenly, and I stopped very suddenly, and the man behind me didn't stop soon enough.
Okay.
And he went bang into the back of my car, which was only about 2 months old. Wasn't very impressed, so I got out in the pouring rain, slammed my door and walked towards the back of my car, and there was a man coming the other way with a similar expression on his face, and we sort of met sort of eyeball to eyeball, and there was a total silence for about 5 or 6 seconds, apart from the dripping sounds coming from his punctured radiator.
Right.
And then I saw a sort of look of recognition and surprise come into this man's eyes. I thought, I've got him now.
It's you.
Aha! I thought, I've got him now. But so I was even more amazed to hear the man say, as his expression changed once again to annoyance, he said, well, who cares anyway? I never did like your news reading.
And thanks a lot, buddy.
So much for being well known.
I know. We came across each other when you returned to Channel 7 as our main presenter in Sydney and across New South Wales. That continued for a few years.
Yes.
Until a major turning point in your
yes.
life. Can
yes,
you take
indeed.
Us through that?
Yes, I discovered one very eventful Friday morning. I went to see the doctor, and I was told that I had prostate cancer. And I had not the faintest idea. All I said, I'd said to my local doctor, I think... He said to me, any other problems while you're here? I said, oh, not really. I said, but I suppose it's just old age or older age. I said, I must admit I'm having a little difficulty going to the toilet sometimes. I said, especially when I go to the theatre, I go to the toilet in the interval and you stand there and I stand there and I stand there and nothing happens. And three or four men come and they go and they sometimes even say good evening to me as they go, you know. I said, but I suppose that's just old age. No, he said, it's nothing at all to do with old age, I don't think. I want you to go and see a specialist. Mm-hmm. So I went. This is all a waste of time, I thought. And I walked in there, and I'd had a couple of tests done, and I remember I was very anxious to get away because I had an interview at the station, at Channel 7, by about 11:30 time. And the time was going, and the doctor, obviously the specialist, had been held up somewhere. But eventually he did arrive, and I just said, look, I'm afraid you're very late. I've got to get off, I'm sorry, but just say everything's okay. And he said, will you please sit down? Mm. Mr. Clipperson, you have prostate cancer. I never realised how quickly a statement like that can make the sun disappear from the sky.
Yes.
And he then proceeded me in a complete stunned state to explain to me what could or could not be done. You can have an operation, you can have radiotherapy, you can wait and see what happens, etc. It's a whole series of different things. And he ended up by saying, I'd like you to go home and have a cup of tea with your wife and discuss this, and you decide which particular way you'd like to take this. Now, Lee, I'd always assumed that it was the doctor's task to tell you what you should do.
Yes.
Not ask you to tell him. To me, it seemed a bit like having your own lottery and hoping that you pick out the right ticket.
Mm.
Anyway.
And your head spinning, no doubt.
Absolutely spinning, to such an extent that this is a Parramatta, and the street in which he had his surgery was a one-way street. And I drove the full length of it on the way home the wrong way.
In a daze.
People, yes. Too, to get me, I just kept going. I just was completely gone. Wow. So, yes... I had prostate cancer. So do many other people, I know. And it's just as much a shock to them as it was to me. Then I had an operation. I decided the operation was the best. And for some reason, there was a problem. The operation was not a complete success. One part of the operation, part of the bladder, would not heal up properly. Now, I assumed that this was a piece of cake, this whole thing. Mm. But when you suddenly realise that the specialist tells you that you're only the second person that he's ever done the operation on where this particular problem has occurred, worries you. Yes. And you just have to literally accept the fact that there's nothing you can do. I guess I've been brought up as a Christian, yes. But for many years, because of the industry I was in, I'm afraid I neglected that. I mean, you know, one day's the same as another in this industry. Yeah. You don't have Sundays off because it's Sunday, and therefore church is something which you seldom think about, or I did. But I suddenly realised that this was the last resort. Funny thing to say, I mean it.
Yeah.
This was the last resort. So I actually asked, my God, please, will you help me? Will you please help me to get better? And I will do whatever I can to help if you ask me to do something in the future. The sort of thing anybody would say.
Yeah.
And amazing. Within about 6 weeks, it cleared up, got completely better. But I remember very clearly lying in that bed in a private ward when the lights had been put out and just staring at the ceiling and the lights flashing across the ceiling from the cars outside in the street, thinking to myself, what on earth's going to happen to me? What on earth is going to happen? In other words, you suddenly realise your humanity and how brittle you are, physically and mentally. And you're suddenly, I believe, shaken until your teeth rattle. And I believe that that is what the Almighty does sometimes.
Yeah.
And one is very privileged to have one's teeth shaken.
What an amazing thing to be able to say, because it was quite a defining time for your faith, wasn't it?
It was indeed. Mm. It was indeed. And it's amazing the number of things which I know God, through other people, asked me to do in relation to my faith from that time on. It changed my entire thinking. And I suddenly realised how very human I was and how most of us so easily get mixed up in our own world and think that we are above all that. Rubbish.
And it was the end of your news career.
It was the end of my news career.
What was that kind of perspective like?
Frightening. Especially when, I mean, I was told I wouldn't be going back on some considerable time before the thing healed itself up, because I had been off for about a month and people kept on saying, where's Roger? Why isn't he back on air? What has happened to him? And they said, we couldn't keep on making up excuses. We would give the impression that we'd literally, you know, fired you for some inexplicable reason and were refusing to tell everybody. So they just broadcast this to the media. And I remember, again, one of the most terrifying, horrible moments of my life was the Sunday when the newspapers released this information. And there, across one of the Sunday papers, was the words, Roger's cancer. And then the phone calls began. And there were literally hundreds of phone calls. We used to fill up my own system at home with as many messages as possible. Then we'd play them back and then set it and redo it again. And this went on for 2 weeks. The floods of calls coming into the station. We know that this is love, that they're showing an appreciation for you. But at the same time, you really cannot believe that this enormous wave is washing over you at the very time when you think, what on earth can I do next? And you, all these people are sorry for you, for your situation, but you can do nothing about it. Does that explain what I'm trying to say?
Exactly. And that's reality.
Absolutely.
That's the interesting thing. Our default position seems so much one of health, strength and longevity. And we are made to be, as brilliant creatures as we are, miracles, but yes, still frail.
And I dependent. Do believe in miracles.
Yeah. And as that was going on, you had and continued to build all the more an involvement in Christian radio.
Yes. I had been, for a number of years, I had been on the board of directors here at 103.2, as it was called then.
Yes.
I'd been a director for quite some time. In fact, from the advent of this becoming a radio station, I had been involved with Reverend Vernon Turner as one of the part-time announcers. So I knew the place pretty well. But it's amazing. It was only after, this experience with the prostate cancer that I was asked to become the chairman. And it is amazing the incredible things I saw happen here, not because I was the chairman, but because I had the privilege of being there and being able to see God literally at work turning this station into a modern-day station, literally in front of my eyes.
Yeah. I can actually attest to this. This is not an interview about me, but I just offer this little perspective. I had the privilege of serving on the board a couple of times with you, with Roger, and it was nothing in the midst of a sometimes a complex or difficult or challenging discussion for us to be wrestling with this, and Roger would say, you know what I think we should do now? We should all pray. I thought, what an amazing thing to be on a board like that, in a meeting like that. And we did. And the answers to prayer were just, as you say, often miraculous.
I mean, without going into too much detail, how on earth we got this particular wonderful radio station building. It was remarkable. I won't go into all the details, but you could literally see, I believe, God's hand at work very clearly saying, this station is coming to you.
What was it about radio that captured you most? Why do you think it was the radio thing, and say, for instance, not television?
Because I think radio is far more intimate than television. Television is razzmatazz. It's makeup, it's bright lights. But radio is not. Radio goes straight into your ears, into your brain. And you do not have, and you may think this is strange, you do not have the problem of having to see it.
I know what you mean.
See, there's a pretty clear statement, as a rule of thumb, which says you watch four more times than you listen. In other words, there's very often a situation where you're watching something, but it's still not really going in. Whereas when there's only one thing to do, listen, you will listen.
That's where we get the term mental chewing gum from. You watch some of those television programs.
Yes.
I know it's very true. I must say this. Through it all, you've had the most stalwart of a wife standing by you through all the ups and downs. Claire, your wife. Tell us about her.
Claire is, and always has been, without any question, as the song says, the wind beneath my wings. Mm. She always has been. And I trust she always will be. And I think one of the main reasons is that she's always had a love of theatre, but as an amateur. She'd never wanted to be a professional, which meant she understood some of my foibles and my moods and tantrums at times, believe it or not.
I can't believe that.
I'm pleased she's not here because she'll back me up.
She'll be listening, mate.
all of that. But without any question, because of that very fact, I think our marriage has been such a wonderful experience. You see so many people who are both involved in this industry of ours, and it's very, very hard, I think, for one to play second fiddle, if that's the right word, to the other, because both of them are striving to be number one in their profession. And often we've talked, Claire and myself, and we've often discussed the fact that we don't really know where one ends and the other one begins. In other words, the responsibilities overlap. I don't think there's a set way of says, well, you have to do the ironing and I have to do the washing up. That doesn't happen. There's sort of an overlap. I'm sure there are many people listening right now to your program, Lee, nodding.
Nodding, yes. I'm nodding too. As you look back over your life, a life of great opportunity, some considerable privilege, some considerable challenge, and many wonderful opportunities. How do you reflect back on that life now?
I reflect back on that clearly as a life which has indeed been blessed by God. He's clearly indicated that he wanted me to do certain things, and when I didn't take any notice, he just shook me until I did. And I believe that, as I mentioned a little while ago briefly, I think that is an enormous privilege to, as it were, be shaken by the Almighty, because he considers you worth being shaken, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
But at the same time, I think humility has to be the centre of it. It's only by living it that you can see, that you can actually see clearly that that is what happened because he did that and because you had a situation which he cured. He did the whole thing. There's no question about that. And that must give you tremendous humility. Mm. Humility is the centre of it.
It's a great place to be even when it's tough.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. It's only when it gets tough that I really learn what sort of a person, or I learned what sort of a person I was. And I wasn't nearly as strong as I thought I was. And I trust that since that experience, I've never been quite as arrogant.
Roger, when I took over Open House a couple of months ago, we started drawing up our list of interview subjects. You are right near the top.
And, well, that's a great honour.
I now know why. And now my listeners know why. It's been a great pleasure to catch up again. And thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Well, may I wish you continued success, whatever you decide to do in the future, because I know very perfectly well, Lee, that like myself, you also have been given a very clear direction, and the person at your helm is also called Almighty God.
Yeah. Roger Clemson, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Across Australia, this is Open House.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology Solutions. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.